cannabis, it does have an impact on the brain, on a system called the endogenous cannabinoid system. And we have now evidence showing that it plays a role in brain maturation, especially during adolescence. So if you start using during that period, maybe the harmful effects will be more potent than if you start later on.
Cannabis consumption is highly prevalent among adolescents and young adults. It's about 30-35%, so one out of three young people in our society use cannabis.
That's Dr. Stéphane Povin and Dr. Alexandre Dumais, who will talk about the research on the extent to which cannabis use in young people is associated with the risk of perpetrating physical violence. Their work appears in the July 2020 issue of the American Journal of Psychiatry. I'm Michael Roy, executive editor of the American Journal of Psychiatry, and this is AJP Audio. Dr. Stéphane Povin is a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Addiction at the University of Montreal. He also is a researcher in the university's Institute of Mental Health of Montreal. He is holder of the Eli Lilly Canada Chair on Schizophrenia Research. He's interested in how alcohol and cannabis can affect brain structures and the reward system in individuals with serious mental disorders. Dr. Alexandre Dumais is a psychiatrist, a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Addiction at the University of Montreal, and a researcher in the university's Institute of Mental Health. His main research projects have examined the neurobiology of violence and treatment of patients with schizophrenia. In particular, he has investigated the use of virtual reality technology as a therapy for patients with treatment-resistant schizophrenia. Dr. Povin and Dr. Dumais are co-authors of an article in our July issue entitled "Association Between the Use of Cannabis and Physical Violence in Youth, a Meta-Analytical Investigation." Dr. Povin, Dr. Dumais, hello and welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, you begin your article by outlining that many countries are seeing an upward trend in the use of cannabis among young people. So first, could you give us an idea of just how prevalent the use of cannabis is among young people?
Yeah. Well, if you take a really global perspective on this question and go back to the numbers in the 60s and you compare them to today, clearly there has been an increase in the prevalence of cannabis smoking in youth across several Western countries. In Canada, where we're from, in the early 60s, it was about 10% of those between 15 and 25 years old who smoked cannabis at least once in the past year. And now today it's more 35%. If you break up these numbers in Canada at the moment, those who are under 18, the prevalence of past year use is about 15%. And for those between 18 and 25, it's about 50% who smoked in the past year. In the US, the numbers are pretty similar, about 15% in adolescents and about 35-40% in those between 18 and 25. And if you look at the Western countries, it's easier to get numbers for teenagers, so for those under 18. And it does vary from one country to another, maybe between 10 or 25%, but I'd say the mean is about 15% of past year use in adolescents.
So with this increase in the number of young people using cannabis comes interest in the effects of the drug. Some prior research has shown that young people who use cannabis may endure adverse behavioral and cognitive effects. Could you describe some of the adverse outcomes that are linked to the use of this drug? And are these outcomes linked to other difficulties over time?
Yeah. Well, there could be neurobiological reasons why cannabis smoking in youth could lead to more harmful effects. Because cannabis, it does have an impact on the brain, on a system called the endogenous cannabinoid system. And we have now evidence showing that it plays a role in brain maturation, especially during adolescence. So if you start using during that period, maybe the harmful effects will be more potent than if you start later on. So basically the side effects or the harmful effects would be, the first one, of course, that comes to mind is addiction. Cannabis use disorder among those who tried the substance at least once in their life, it will be about 5 to 10% who will eventually develop a cannabis use disorder. Cannabis seems to have an impact on cognition, on verbal learning, on speed of processing. So because of that, maybe cannabis might have an impact on academic achievement. Some people think it's actually the reverse. If you have academic problems, then it will lead to cannabis smoking. So it's a bit complicated. The impact on cognition could explain why also cannabis does seem harmful for those who drive under the influence. There is evidence out there showing that if you smoke while driving, you are more at risk of being involved in a car crash. And although it's an event that is more rare, there is pretty good evidence, pretty strong evidence showing that psychosis risk, it seems to be involved in the onset of the disorder. And we're studying that population. And for those who smoke cannabis, lose control over their consumption, eventually it will lead to a poorer prognosis in this population.
It sounds like there are a range of outcomes that are associated with the use of cannabis among young people. Now, you write in your article that the literature has been mixed as to whether there is a link between the use of cannabis and violent behavior and aggression. Why has this research been so varied?
Main reasons are that the studies use heterogeneous measure of physical violence, first of all, particularly the type of violence. Some studies use a broad definition of physical violence, which include all type of violence, which is sexual aggression, fighting. And some other studies were more specific, and they were only measuring one type of violence, let's say fighting. Another reason is that there was different ways of measuring violent behaviors. Some studies were using self-reported questionnaire, and other studies used chart review to see if there was violent behavior. Also, there was different time intervals. For instance, some studies used violence in the past month as a definition, and others past year violence. Also, there was heterogeneous measures of cannabis consumption. So the measure was usually broadly defined. Cannabis use in the past month, and we didn't really know if it was only once or every day, or cannabis use in the past year. And it was limited to the frequency, so we didn't know how much they were using at the time they were using and what type of cannabis, the potency of the cannabis. Other reasons are that some study control for possible confounders, such as previous violence, which is a major risk factor of future violence. Also, possible confounders that were not controlled in studies was other substance use, such as alcohol use. Study used different designs. Some were prospective, other were cross-sectional. And a few studies had a small sample size, which they were probably underpowered.
Well, so with all these varied protocols and varied findings, the main objective you had for your article was to further clarify the association between cannabis use and violence, and more specifically, the perpetration of any type of physical violence by adolescents and young adults. Why did you focus on this objective?
We focus on this objective because, first of all, there are a growing number of countries, and in the U.S. also, that Washington State and Colorado State, that have liberalized their cannabis legislation by decriminalizing or legalizing use for medical or recreational use. In Canada, it's recreational use that is legalized. Second, cannabis consumption, as it was said before, is highly prevalent among adolescents and young adults. It's about 35%, so one out of three young people in our society use cannabis. Third, our previous research has shown that there was an association between cannabis use and violence in adolescents and young adults, as well as with people with mental illness. And that's why we conducted a previous meta-analysis on people with major mental illness, and we found that there was a link between cannabis use and violence. In the literature, there was also another meta-analysis on young people for specifically dating violence, and the authors found that there was a link between violence, physical violence in the intimate relationship, and cannabis use. But for adolescents and young adults, it was still inconsistent before doing the meta-analysis. And finally, we wanted, if there was a link, to make some recommendation for young people. So public health recommendation may emerge from our study.
Now I'd like to talk about the way you went about your work. Could you walk us through the steps of your meta-analysis?
So there was several steps that have been taken. So you know, we conducted obviously a literature research using PubMed, PsycINFO, Web of Science, and Google Scholar to identify all relevant research reporting on the cannabis violence relationship, and specifically adolescent and young adults. The search period encompassed the days from inception of each database up to July 2019, which is the time when we finished the meta-analysis. We used text word and indexing term with keywords that were inclusive of violence and cannabis use. In the second step, we selected peer-reviewed studies only. They were selected if they met the following criteria. The sample had to be had to include adolescent and young adults with a maximum mean age of 30 years old. Cannabis use or cannabis use disorder had to be independently assessed from other substance. We also selected studies that were measuring physical violence, obviously, but not other form of violence. If it was only verbal aggression, it was rejected. It was not. It was excluded. And finally, we selected studies with a design that was retrospective, cross-sectional, or longitudinal. Thirdly, we used a standardized form to extract the data, and it was all double-checked. And finally, the quality assessment of the study was independently undertaken by two of the authors, Dr. Podvin and another author, Laura Delazizo.
You ended up reporting on studies that involved nearly 300,000 adolescents and young adults. How did you go about analyzing the data?
Yeah, well, it's important to mention from the very beginning that we're not, in a meta-analysis, we're not extracting the raw data of each of these 300,000 participants. What we're using is the summary statistic reported in each study. So here, the summary statistic, it's an odds ratio, which describes the magnitude of the association between cannabis smoking and violent behavior. Then, after extracting the odds ratio of each study, we do the aggregation of all these odds ratios across studies. And we did that using what we call a random effect model. Basically, what it does is that the model will give more weight to the studies having a larger sample size, which makes sense. Also, the model will consider if there is variability across studies. So that was the primary analysis. There's some sub-analysis, some secondary analysis to better understand the data set. So basically, we verified if there was any difference in studies that adjust for potential confounding factors like age, sex, ethnicity, alcohol use, really important. We also verified if there was a difference between studies with a higher quality. Our criterion was if the study was a longitudinal one or a cross-sectional one. So we did verify if there was any difference between those two types of design. And also we verified if there was an effect of the frequency of use in the data. So basically, in the data set that we had, we were able to categorize the users in the three categories. Those who use the substance lifetime, those who use the substance in the past year, and more of a compulsive manner, more heavy use, more use meeting eventually the criteria for cannabis use disorder. Also, we verified if there was heterogeneity across studies, and at the end, we also verified publication bias. It's something really important in psychiatry. The knowledge that we have is limited by the fact that in many domains, people do not report their negative results. So we did some kind of estimation to figure out if there is a publication bias in this data set or not. So these were basically the steps that we followed.
Okay, so we've set the table. Let's get to the results of your work. What were some of your main findings?
Yeah, well, for the primary analysis, we did find a moderate association between cannabis smoking and violent behavior. The odds ratio is about 2. So basically, with this result, we were able to confirm our hypothesis. So that was the main finding. As mentioned previously, we wanted to get more from this data set. So we did some secondary analysis. And what we showed is that there were basically no differences between the studies that make adjustment for potential confounding factors, like alcohol, for instance, and the studies that did not control for these factors. So this suggests that our results are not confounded by these factors. Also, we looked at the study design, if it had an impact on results. And again, there was no impact. The studies with the longitudinal design with follow-ups did produce pretty much the same results as the studies that were cross-sectional studies where there was only one assessment. Importantly, we also show that for the studies including individuals who are having more heavy use, then the Hodge ratio was actually more elevated, suggesting a potential effect of frequency of use on the results, a potential dose response effect. Unfortunately, we found out that there was a lot of heterogeneity across studies. This is something that you don't want. You want results to be as homogeneous as possible. And good news, we did not find any evidence of a publication bias, any evidence that there might be some unpublished out there with negative results. So these are the main findings of our meta-analysis.
And the discussion section of your article notes that a number of factors may be implicated in the perpetration of violence. What are some of the potential mechanisms that may have a role in the modern association that you've documented between cannabis use and physical violence?
The exact mechanism, I'll be honest, is unknown. But there's two main hypotheses of how cannabis may increase violence. One is psychophysiological, and it's related to the cannabis that may affect the user's mental state during intoxication or withdrawal. Especially, it might impair the ability to tamp down or decrease the aggressive impulse. Also, when people are intoxicated, it might induce feeling of paranoia, anxiety, panic, that may be associated with violence. In dependent users, those that are smoking a lot, withdrawal may contribute to irritability and lead to emotional outbursts when they're in that state. Moreover, chronic use may modify the brain structures related to emotion regulation, such as the amygdala or the cingulate cortex. On the other end, there's another big hypothesis that may be why people are changing the legislation for cannabis. It's the social context. The social context of cannabis user may be the cause of violence in that procuring and using cannabis may promote criminal behavior and aggression for economic gain or to support substance use habits. Aggression may occur more specifically within the broader system of drug use, let's say fights over failing to pay debts, and may be used to support rules associated with the black market. So that's the two main hypotheses.
And does your study have other implications for young people who use cannabis? For example, is there evidence to indicate that they may be at risk for certain forms of mental illness or problems with development?
Yeah, well, as mentioned previously, the first risk is cannabis use disorder. That's one of them. There's also a risk of developing an anxiety or major depressive disorder. As mentioned previously, also, there's a big concern regarding psychosis. The evidence is pretty strong. And what I mean by that is that it's quite consistent from one study to another. Nearly every studies in the field show the same pattern. One of the understudied psychiatric disorder, in my opinion, is bipolar disorder. It has been understudied, but the evidence that we have also suggests that cannabis seems to be involved in the onset of the disorder, and it seems to also have a negative impact on the prognosis of the disorder. And there's also some evidence that there could be a link between cannabis and suicidal ideas or suicidal attempts. This is based on a much smaller number of studies, but there are some indications of a potential association.
And were there any limitations that may have affected your findings?
Yeah, there are, and it's important to acknowledge them. The first one, well, I think it was mentioned previously, but the study results were heterogeneous, something that you want to avoid as much as possible in a meta-analysis in our case. Also, we were able to examine if cannabis smoking has an impact on violent behavior later on, but we were not able to extract data in longitudinal studies to examine the reverse association. Is it possible that violent behavior leads to eventual cannabis smoking? There were only two studies, so we were not able to run a sub-analysis on this. So the reverse causality is something that we'll need to investigate in the future. Also, the confounding factors that were considered in the studies that we included in the meta-analysis, some of them did take a look at important covariates like alcohol, but we were surprised to see that only one or two studies did take a look at conduct problems. And conduct problems are risk factors for both violent behavior and cannabis smoking. So it could be an important confounding factor. So we were not able to control that variable. Also, for the dose response analysis we did, it was imperfect because we categorized people based on the frequency of use, but we didn't have consistently reported data on the quantities used by participants. And this is something that would have been important to analyze. And also another limitation is that there are plenty of varieties of cannabis. Some cannabis extract have a stronger potency, higher THC levels. Others have higher cannabidiol levels. So all this information is usually not reported. So we don't know how much of an influence it might have on the results because the data is just not reported. So these would be the limitations of what we did.
And before we wrap up, I'd like to take a step outside the scope of your article. We've touched a little bit about this, but a number of regulations and laws have been changed or passed in Canada and in the United States that permit greater access to medical marijuana. And does the medical use of marijuana have any bearing on your work?
I would say that in my work, it's contraindicated to use medical cannabis. I am a psychiatrist working with forensic patients and mentally ill prison inmates. So some of my patients ask for medical use of cannabis, but as many have problems regulating their emotions, have problems controlling their substance use and have psychotic disorders, I recommend, because of the important downside of the use, that they abstain from recreational use, and I don't prescribe medical cannabis. I think it's not good for these patients.
Overall, what would be the main messages that mental health professionals, as well as the general public, should take away from your work?
Mental health professionals should be aware of this finding and should not minimize the violence downside of cannabis use among youth, especially when their patients are reporting, and that happened a lot, that the youth diminish their aggressive affects in order to continue their habits, and they're saying that it's helpful for them, and our research is saying the opposite, so they should be aware of that. In addition, preventive measures and intervention programs should be implemented in school settings. Adolescents should be provided with educational information for good decision making and discourage from initiating and adopting chronic pattern of use, as we have shown that heavy users may be at higher risk of violence. For the general public, we think that the take-home message would be, until no secure exposure pattern, for instance, quantity of cannabis, potency level, is determined by research, withholding from regularly using cannabis may be a better option to reduce the risk of violence, especially in at-risk and vulnerable youth, such as those with mental illness. They should avoid taking cannabis.
And finally, we talked a little bit about this in terms of certain interesting things that you found that might be interesting to pursue. What recommendations do you have for further research in this area?
Yeah, well, I think the first concern is to fix some of the methodological problems of the studies that have been pursued thus far. I mean, these are very good studies, but there's always room for improvement. I think that in future studies, conduct problems need to be systematically investigated. We need to know more about the reverse causality problem. Maybe it's violence that leads to cannabis smoking. We need to have data on the quantities used by participants, by smokers. And we also need more data on the types of cannabis that is used by participants. The potency, the routes of administration, the ratio of THC versus CBD, it's important. We also believe that it will be important in the future to pay more attention regarding the relationship between cannabis and violent behavior, there needs to be more research for those individuals who have a serious psychiatric disorder. In our own data, we have results suggesting that the cannabis violence link seems to be stronger in those with a major psychiatric disorder. So we need more research in that regard, and the quality of these studies needs to be improved. Also, we need to better understand what are the potential mechanisms involved. I'm not going to repeat what my colleague just said, but there could be biological, psychological, and social factors. And in the end, one of the potential implications of what we've done is that we believe that violent behavior should be, in the context of legalization of cannabis, that it should be an outcome measured in the states, in the countries that legalize the substance, with other outcomes of importance. This one is probably an outcome to consider as the potential, to measure the potential success or failure of legalization. So these are pretty much the implications of our work, we think.
Dr. Stéphane Povin and Dr. Alexandre Dumais, co-authors of an article in our July issue on the association between cannabis use and violence among adolescents and young adults. Thank you both for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
This concludes this episode of AJP Audio. You can rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to it. Please also visit our website, ajp.psychiatryonline.org, to check out trending articles, find CME courses, and watch videos highlighting some of our other articles. APA Publishing has other podcasts you can listen to. Psychiatry Unbound is the books podcast from APA Publishing. It's hosted by Dr. Laura Roberts, editor-in-chief of APA Books. Also check out From Pages to Practice, which reviews the latest research published in the journal Psychiatric Services. It's hosted by Dr. Lisa Dixon, editor-in-chief of the journal, along with Dr. Josh Berezin. You can subscribe to these podcasts on Apple, Google, Spotify, or on any of the popular platforms. Next month in AJP Audio, we'll talk with Dr. Jennifer Dwyer of Yale University about the status of hormonal treatments for major depressive disorder. We hope you'll join us too. Thank you for listening.